Yay. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Two Funny Astronauts. I'm one of them, Garrett, and we have.
I'm Mike, the other, but today we're very fortunate to have our good friend and a very funny third funny astronaut here. So today we're three funny astronauts, our good friend Scott Kelly.
Jury's out on that. We'll see.
Well,
Are you being
we'll
a
let
good
the.
Are you
maybe
being
at
a
the
good
end of the
friend or are you being
show.
funny?
I don't know. Maybe at the end of the show, you either call the show. You have three options. It could be called Three Funny Astronauts from now on, or maybe it just goes to One Funny Astronaut, depending on how you two guys do.
I'm thinking mass. I'm thinking, I don't know. I'm not sure if we're, unique enough. A lot of these podcasts, they have a niche, right? They really dive down into a little tiny topic. And I know Two Funny Astronauts is pretty unusual, but I don't think it's unique enough. I think we should be three funny astronauts from the tri-state area.
Yes, that's
How
a
about
great
that?
idea.
We can do a whole season like that.
From New York and New Jersey
In Connecticut, I guess.
and Connecticut, but we got no one from Connecticut right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think there's any astronauts from Connecticut, are there?
I'm sure Rick Mastracchio. He's from
Mastracchio.
Connecticut? Yeah, he's from
Yeah, he's
where's he
from
from?
like Hartford, maybe.
Something like that. And also Burbank.
Oh man.
I flew in space with Mastracchio. I should know where he's from, but I'm really not positive.
Yeah, he's from Connecticut, and so is Burbank. I think they both went to college in Connecticut as well. And there's probably a lot of others.
Well, Burbank's kind of funny.
Dan? He's a good guy, Dan. Yeah.
So we could go with that. That'd be
So,
fun.
yeah.
So
But we're,
how does this show work? Like, having never been on this, I have, or having never watched it either, I have no idea.
Well, what we try to do, Scott, is in this case, particularly with you here, is try to let the listeners and in this case, maybe the viewers, if they're watching over YouTube, get a chance to know about what you've done. If there's some funny stuff in there, that's great. But mainly, just get a chance to talk about some of your experiences, which are quite extraordinary, and for us just to have a conversation. And that's the way I would say we could just start that off. Garrett, do you want to add anything to that or?
No,
Emphasize
no.
to anything
We can
else,
start
though.
by talking about, we both grew up in New Jersey, as we kind of just alluded to. In fact, not too far away from each other. In fact, I get mistaken, by the way, a lot for you and your brother, because they see a short, bald astronaut from New Jersey, and they oh yeah, you're one of the Kellys, and I'm like, no, I'm my own thing, but they don't get that because you guys are a lot more famous than I am. So
You
I
might want to run with
get
that,
that all the
Garrett.
time. Yeah,
I
sometimes
should,
I. So,
because of my last name, I should get confused with Mastracchio. We mentioned Rick Mastracchio. And Rick Mastracchio is a very accomplished, good astronaut. And I did the best I could. But I would get credit a lot of times for stuff that he did. Like, I remember someone came up to me, one of the guys at Ellington, he said, "Hey, great job on the STA software." And this is when we were new astronauts. I didn't even know what the STA was at the time. And I just went with it. "Oh, thank you. You're welcome. Thank you very much." He would
I
get
sometimes I
my
do.
complaints and bills, but I would get compliments. You might want to go with it.
Better for people to confuse you being him than the other way around, I think, because
Absolutely. That's what you should go with.
he's such a smart and talented guy.
He's very smart.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
Right.
true.
So that's what you want to go with, I think,
You know,
Gary. You say, "Yeah,
sometimes I
sure, I spent a
do
year in space or
when
so."
they mistake me for one, they think I'm one of the Kellys, because we should, for those who don't know, Scott's got a twin brother, Mark Kelly, who was actually my commander on Discovery, brought me home from my long duration mission. And is now a U.S. senator. So sometimes I do just go with it when I get mistaken for one of these guys. Like the other day, I walked right into the Senate cloakroom, and it was great. They just let me right in. I'll come by, Senator Kelly, welcome, and I got the free lunch. It was
I
great.
go on the floor of the Senate. I go on the floor of the Senate occasionally and vote, but no one knows.
So tell us, there must
Who's
have been many
standing?
times, right? You had many opportunities in school, at NASA, and now. To trade places, right? And pretend you're brother. Do you got any? What's the best time you ever did that? What, you got any stories about that?
To be honest with you, we were always asked growing up, "Hey, you ever going to do this? Why don't you do this? Change places on your teachers." Never quite interested us at all. Once we left, got out of high school and graduated from college, obviously that's not something you would ever really think about doing again, right? And then in 1996, along with Massimino, Mike Massimino and you know 42 other people, 44 no 41 other people, math in public.
Good math.
And the three of us, there were 44 of us in that astronaut class. And then this whole idea, because now we're in the same class again, of like switching places. And people would, at, you know, I got to NASA when I was in my late 30s. So that kind of came up again as a topic. Never interested us again until we were supposed to both be in space together at the same time on my last flight, my year-long mission. Unfortunately, eventually my brother's shuttle flight got delayed out of my my time there, so it never happened. But we had this great plan that right before they closed the hatch, he was going to shave off his mustache. I was going to put on a fake mustache. We were going to change clothes, and we were going to make it appear that I went into the space shuttle and he stayed on the space station. And we had it all planned out, and it would have been the best ever of twins, not actually changing places, but making it appear like we did and seeing how the ground would have responded to that.
Is that why Mark had the mustache? I had heard like Mark, you know, M for mustache, M for Mark.
Nah, he had the mustache. We both had mustaches, but after they kind of went out of style and like, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, I shaved mine off, which meant he had to keep his for like the next 10 years because he couldn't look like he was following my lead, right?
Well, I never mixed you guys up, Scott, except for one time, which you probably don't remember. I interviewed with Mark and we became friends and stayed in touch over email while we were waiting to get the word from NASA. And so then when we both got in, I was, you know, of course, very excited to meet everybody. And you were getting something to drink out of a cooler at, I think we were at Pat Forrest's house. So our class, as Scott said, had 44 people in it. And we all got together the Sunday evening before we were going to report to work at Pat Forrest's house. And I went to the backyard to get a beer out of the cooler. And Scott's there, and I mistook him for Mark. And I'm like, hey, Mark, it's great to see you. And he looks at me and he goes, no, I'm Scott. And I was like, oh, man.
Hey, that wasn't when your son pushed my daughter into that trash.
No, that was that. So that was our first night and kids weren't involved. Yeah, tell about that one, Scott.
I don't know. I was just standing there and your son pushes my, like, I don't know, 6 or 7 year old daughter into this trash can and she goes flying along across the floor.
They were younger. I think it was our first Christmas at Ellington with Santa Claus comes.
Yeah.
You know, they did that. Santa Claus would show up in the airplane.
Yeah.
And so Daniel was probably 1 and a half. And I think Samantha was probably maybe around that age, almost the exact same age. And Daniel, I don't think he did anything on purpose, but he certainly got in trouble. he knocked Samantha and made her cry. And it was terrible. Yeah, it was horrific.
Hey, but talking about like switching places made me think about how NASA handles practical jokes and not always too well. Depends, right?
Are you thinking about the gorilla? Is that where you're going?
Gorilla suit.
Yeah. Tell us. Yeah, tell that story. That's great.
So I'm on the space station for, I don't know, I launched in March of 2015, was going to be there a whole year, turned out, wound up being almost a year in space. And it was the summer of 2015, and my brother says, hey, I'm talking to him on the phone one day from the space station. He says, hey, I'm sending you a gorilla suit. And I'm like, what? He goes, I'm sending you a gorilla suit and it's part of your like crew care package. I'm like, why? He's like, there's never been a gorilla in space before. I'm like, yeah, whatever. I had to get to work. So it was already on the rocket, SpaceX rocket. And watching the launch a few days later, rocket blows up. I'm like, okay, lost, you know, $100 million of hardware, probably more. Garrett, you probably know exactly.
I just want to point out that wasn't my fault.
Okay.
Garrett, by the way, was working for SpaceX.
I think it was my brother's. I think it was my brother's fault. The gorilla suit put it over the
fence. Might have been.
Probably a little overweight.
I remember seeing that. That in the fault tree analysis, there was a gorilla. Oh, there we go. There we got some video of it. Look at that.
So the gorilla suit blows up, And I talked to my brother a couple days later, and first thing he says to me, he goes, I'm sending you another gorilla suit. And I'm like, okay. So I don't know, 6 months later, a new gorilla suit shows up. I'm getting towards the end of my flight, and he's like, when are you putting the gorilla suit on? And I'm like, I don't even know where this freaking thing is. So finally I find it, and it's like towards the end of the mission, I'm like, he keeps hounding me about it. Gorilla suit, gorilla suit. We actually had Chuck Lorre involved.
Oh.
He was all in. Like he was, we were emailing, you know, from, you know.
Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, Big Bang
Theory. And a creator of many shows. He's like the most successful television creator in the world.
So we're having this three-person email thing about what to do with the gorilla suit. And I said, how about me in the gorilla suit using the toilet on the space station? Because people are interested in that. And you know what he says? Chuck says, he goes, I'm out.
Really?
One little bathroom humor idea. And he quit on us. He left. Never heard from him again. So I'm like, then I'm stuck in the gorilla suit. The first thing I do is I put it on. And I float down to the Russian segment. They didn't even know I had a gorilla suit. And I've never seen two Russians laugh so hard in my entire life. Maybe there was three of them down there at the time. Then I hid in Tim Koper's crew quarters with it, which he didn't even know there was a gorilla suit on board. And he went to open up his door, and I busted out on him. And immediately I thought he could have a heart attack right now. And I would be responsible for his manslaughter, I guess. But then I got the great Tim Kopra to join me and film that video, which was really just for internal use, right? It was just for our fun. We film it, me chasing him around the space station. I send it to my brother. And then we have it. Rob Navius, the voice of NASA for Mission Control in Houston there, he narrates it. Because he thought it was kind of a fun thing, too. And then a couple of days later, U.S. Senator Mark Kelly sends it to NBC News. And the very next morning, I get an email from the chief of the astronaut office, Chris Cassidy. And he says, hey, give me a call today when you get a moment. I'm like, oh, crap.
That's never good. That's never good.
So I call Cassidy and he says to me, he goes, he goes, hey, I saw that gorilla suit video, and I'm like, yeah. He goes, what else is going on up there? How you doing? Need anything? Meaning that I think his boss told him to talk to me about the gorilla suit video, which he then did. And so he could say, yeah, I talked to him about it. I never heard another word.
Chris is a good guy. That's good leadership. Well played by Chris. Yeah, well done.
But whatever happened to that gorilla suit? Is it still around? Did you guys?
I actually made some other gorilla videos that I'm still waiting for the appropriate moment for them.
I was gonna bring that up, but
what better than now?
I came over to your house last, I guess, about a year ago, Scott, and we had a few beverages, and then you showed me those videos, and I was on the floor. Crying my eyes out, laughing like crazy. Those are so funny. Yeah. You got to do something with those. Those are amazing.
Yeah, I will at some point. I just got to find the right cultural moment to.
How about right now?
Well, I can't. I don't have much time. Take a few minutes.
Can you describe them at all, or is it not even?
Yeah, you know, one of them's about me sleeping in space and. Talk about, you know, the sleeping bag. But then I say, well, you know, I generally don't sleep in a sleeping bag. Generally, I sleep like naked under a stump. So I like to just float around in my crew quarters. And then there's videos of me, you know, looking out at the earth and wishing I was, you know, in my home and talking about missing, you know, stereotypical like gorilla stuff like bananas. But in reality, I don't eat bananas. It's a bad stereotype.
It's really funny because, you know, the clip that went viral, the one that Das just played, is like excellent physical humor. But the videos that you showed me was just like really clever because it's like this sad gorilla astronaut.
Yeah.
And it's just this, you made this character that's like really funny. It's very, very well done.
I'll work on that. I'll resurrect space gorilla soon. And maybe I'll wait until the election.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It sounds like it's something that a lot of people would enjoy, and you do want to wait for the right time to show it. Yeah. I bet if you write to Chuck Lorre now, he'll be interested.
Maybe.
What do you think of that? Yeah.
My brother needs to do that. He knows him. I don't know.
Yeah, he's a guy. I could get to him too. He's a nice guy. But I would let Mark do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let Mark do it. Well, cool. So that was that. Any other shenanigans you want to share with us on your year? Because you're up there for a long time, man. You had to keep things moving. What else was? Yeah. What else did you do to spend a long time? That was. And now, you know, we've had other people around the same amount of time since, but you were the first one leading the charge, the first American to do that. What else was going on up there? What else were you doing?
Carrot, how long was your long duration flight?
Oh, man. See, now you're going to make me feel bad because, I usually brag to people. I was up there for 95 days, and that's chump change. In fact, I'm kind of bummed out because you know what happens at 100 days, right? You get that 100-day patch and everybody, and your brother Mark comes up. I'm on day 95, and he's like, Garrett, it's time to go home. Hop in Discovery. And I'm like, no way, man. I'm standing up here for 5 more days and get that patch. And no. He wouldn't let me. He was like,
that's
right. My plan says you got to get in.
That's right. We have a patch on our suits.
Mm-hmm. Some of us do.
I have four of those.
Well, how about let me borrow one? Well, yeah.
Actually, five. I have like 500 and something days. But anyway,
I'll give you one. Yeah, you go. Garrett, you know what you should do is get a 95 patch made special.
Well, Mark, actually, at the welcome home ceremony for 124, yeah. Mark had to make a little 100 days patch just like that with a little asterisk on it. And then underneath it said almost.
That's like,
that's perfect.
That's like a quarter. That's like a quarter of a year in space. Mm-hmm. You know what a quarter of a year is? It's a quarter of a job.
That's a quarter of a job.
Because half a year, right? Half a year, quarter of a year. You really got to go a year, I think. Yeah. Which I didn't do. Only two Americans have done that so far. Frank Rubio, the longest, and then Mark Vandehei. And I'll tell you what. And this is not a joke. Frank Rubio, I mean, that guy, he went up there thinking he was going to be there for about 4 months on his first flight and wind up staying over a year. That's hard. What I did, spending 6 months and then a year, almost as much time as he did, that's a lot easier because I knew what I was getting into. I knew what to expect. I knew how to manage, like right from the very beginning, to manage my fatigue level, my motivation, handle my mental health up there as best I could over that long period of time. But he didn't have the opportunity to prepare for that. So that his mission, I think, is really, really unique in the history of spaceflight.
Yeah. What were some of the things that you did, Scott, knowing you were getting yourself into a year up there? What were some of the things you did to prepare or have ready to keep you going?
You know, just stuff like making sure I had a plan for what I wanted to do in my spare time, making sure I had all the stuff that I felt like I didn't have that I might need, you know, that I didn't have on my first long flight and might need on the second. But I think the biggest thing was just kind of a mindset that part of my mission is being there for a long time. So as the days passed, I looked at it as almost like a merit badge versus a slog. So I had more motivation at the end of that year-long flight that I did at the end of the 6-month flight, more motivation and energy, just because the duration was part of the mission. When it's not part of the mission, then, you know, after the first, you know, few months, if things aren't going to, what's the difference between month 4 and month 6 if you're kind of doing the same work? Not really much of anything, unless part of your mission objective is to be there for a long time. And that's how I feel. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course you learned a lot. We were talking about your brother, Mark. You guys did that twin study while you were up there. Was that, how did that come about? Was that something that who came up? How did that happen?
So there's a lot of misinformation about where that came from. Was it NASA? Was it me? It was kind of a combination of both. What happened was when my brother and I, well, you know, when we became, because we're in the same class in 1996, mm-hmm. we got there. I never had any expectation either way, whether NASA would try to do any kind of comparative study between Mark and I, because as, you know, science informed people know, when you have an experiment, you need a large sample group to make it statistically significant. Mm. And a sample of one kind of in a vacuum is not statistically significant. But this turned out to be like a longitudinal study, which you can make arguments that you have comparative data in that case. But what happened was, when I was assigned to the flight and we were getting briefed up for the public announcement of the crew, me and Misha Kornienko, the Russian guy, mm-hmm. I just asked a question. I said, hey, if the science people were briefing us on the science, and I said, hey, if someone asks about any kind of comparative studies between my brother and I being identical twins, is that something anyone is considering? I would have never asked that on a 6-month flight, because the year was just kind of so unique in NASA's history. I thought, well, maybe someone would be interested. And the science folks at NASA says, no, there's, we have no plans for that. And I was like, okay, whatever. I was just trying to get, you know, help for the press conference on the announcement. And then a couple of weeks later, they came back to me and they said, you know, we started talking about that idea, that question you asked. And then we reached out to universities around the country if they thought they could get any valuable data and science from, you know, two identical twins that, you know, one's spending nearly a year in space and the other, you know, spent much, much less time in space, you know, like 50 days compared to 500.
Mm-hmm. But, I think not that you lured that over him or anything, right? You know, you never rub that in, do you?
That's why he ran for this. This right here is why he ran to be a U.S. senator. Right? But yeah, so they came back and they said, oh, yeah, people are really interested in doing this. And, you know, they had years of data on my brother. So they had great stuff from him already. And it's still an ongoing study that has had, you know, pretty interesting results, actually, some of which are, you know, contrary to what they expected.
What did they find? So that's the way it happened. What did they find out? Because I've heard different versions of that too. What in the end, what has been shown and what has been learned from all that?
You know, so first of all, this people ask me about the science on this all the time. And I always tell them, I'm not a scientist. This was not my science. Some of the science was just on my blood. I don't even know what they're doing with it or other bodily samples that we take up there. But some of the interesting results was like my gene expression as compared to his, as a result of the environment, they could say 7% of that changed. And our genes, our DNA, RNA, protein expression is like whether they're turned on and off. Mm-hmm. 7% of mine had changed. My telomeres, which are the ends of our chromosomes, they get shorter, more frayed as we get old. They actually got better. Mm. On me in space in this harsh environment. The hypothesis was they would get worse. Initially, NASA thought that this was due to exercise and the diet we were on that helped my telomeres. Mm-hmm. But after I got home, they realized that about 6 months later that the Japanese had a telomeres experiments on these little worms on board, and their telomeres got better too. Mm-hmm. And I never once saw those guys working out on any of the exercise equipment or anything. but it turns out like some radiation is good for your telomeres. That's what they learned.
Wow.
It might be bad for something else. Hopefully I'll never find out that part, but
we should set the record straight, because there's a lot of misconception out there, because there's the media made a big deal about that. You have a different, you know, your DNA changed, right? So they made it sound like you had a whole new set of DNA, like you got became a mutant with some kind of mutant powers, like you get telekinesis like laser beams shooting out of your eyes or something.
Yeah. That's Magneto.
He had that stuff. Scott had that stuff before he flew in space.
right. That was just from growing up in New Jersey. Yeah. But the thing is that none of that's true, right? It's just the expression of the genes, right?
Yeah. All of our gene expression changes all the time, but I think they were able to kind of isolate it to not all of it, but we have changes in gene expression due to our environment. Mm-hmm. People do on Earth.
Yeah.
They were able to kind of somewhat correlate this to spaceflight, I think. Again, I'm not the expert, but I think the most significant result of that twin study is that after I spent a year in space, I am now, well, certainly more handsome, but smarter than my twin brother, Mark, as evidenced by the fact that he's now a U.S. Senator.
I would say happier too.
Probably, yes. Right?
When I saw you, we were at your birthday party, and thanks again, both Gary and I got to go. It was really wonderful. You guys had a joint Thank birthday you. Party. It was great to be there. And I don't know, what Mark was saying, he just had a rough week in Congress, so it seems like maybe there was some personality shift there too. Yeah. Maybe you got happier, and he's not as happy as he was. Maybe
he calls me every. He calls
me. Have to change.
Oh, go ahead, Garrett. Go ahead.
You might have to change call signs, right? Because you're grumpy, yeah, right?
I think no maybe one knows Mark. What he is. It's a big secret. But my brother is a U.S. senator, right? He loves a lot of the job, and he's doing a really outstanding job. It's really, really tough. Hard work. He says sometimes it's like middle school in there.
Yeah. Well, he is doing a great job. I'm very grateful.
He's making us proud. So thank you, Mark. Well done.
Yeah. I'm sure he's not listening.
He's too busy. He better not be listening. He's got
a lot of work. He's still upset with the,
Yeah. Well, some of that stuff with the twin study, I'd heard too, that some of the changes that they noticed were changes that they would notice in other high risk or high exploration exercises, people climbing mountains and things like that. Is that what you found as well? Is that true? I heard that somewhere. Is that correct?
I have no idea. I'm not a scientist. You're not a scientist either.
I'm an engineer. No, we're all engineers here.
Yeah, engineer.
Yeah. Have you heard of this guy, Chris Mason? Have you ever heard of him, Scott?
Yeah, I know Chris.
Yeah, in New York. I'm going to have dinner with him on this weekend on Saturday. But he spoke to my students about some of the stuff that you went through. He seems like
he's one of the big twin study researchers.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And he spoke over at Columbia.
I think I'm going to see him at I think he's going to be at the Explorers Club dinner in a couple of weeks.
You going to be there?
Yeah, I'll be there.
Oh, awesome. Okay, good.
It'll be my first time. Is it worth it?
Too late. You already got your ticket.
Yeah.
No, it absolutely is. I think this one is worth it because it's a space related one. They're doing a space theme. Mm-hmm. And so for that, especially for us, it's kind of fun because there'll be more former astronauts and people from NASA we get to see. And it's always fun. It's the whole weekend is kind of fun if you're able to go to some of the activities they have on Saturday. But I think it's supposed to do something, I think, talking to Peggy, and they're going to talk about Axiom and some of the other things that are going on.
Peggy Whitson will be there?
I think so. Yeah, that's why I think she's planning to be there.
Are you a member?
I am. Are you a member?
No. No one ever asked me.
Oh, you can get in easy.
Are you supposed to be asked, invited, or are you supposed to
No, you just got to be, if you want in, you're in. I just need, I can sponsor you, or anybody in the club can.
Are you going to pay that, right? Isn't there like, do you guys got to pay dues or something?
There are dues. However, the dues that if you pay that you're in New York, because I'm a New Yorker, are higher than if you're not in New York. Oh. And the higher level of membership that you are, the lower the dues.
Wow.
And so I think with your accomplishments, Scott, you'd be a pretty high level of membership.
Like platinum level? Do you get to go into the room?
No, it's called a fellow. Like you're it's not a frequent flyer program. But if it was, Scott has a lot of frequent flyer miles in space.
He does a lot of miles.
But it's
You get to go into the room first before everybody else. You know, if you're platinum level,
you're certainly first up at the dinner. You get to go to the buffet table first.
You get to go to the buffet table. Do
that. Is there a level where instead of paying dues, that they pay you?
Ooh,
I don't think they've got. I don't know about that, but if there was, you'd be in.
Work on that for me, and then
I'll see what I can do, but I wouldn't count on it. But it's well worth it, I think. I think you'll enjoy your time there. Well, you should go by the club itself. The club is extraordinary. It's got amazing. Have you been to the club? I know you haven't been to the dinner, but the club is pretty amazing. It's got a really interesting displays and a lot of history, and it's a fun place to go and hang around.
I'm a member of that Circumnavigators Club.
Oh, I don't know about that. Where's that?
I'm a member of that club too, just on the account of the fact that I'm Jewish.
not so. Oh, that's pretty good. We didn't script that out, folks. He came up with that on his own.
I'm not Jewish, but no comment.
That's a different club. Where's the Circumnavigator Club? Is that in New York as well?
I think it is. Yeah, but you can do that. Like you, I think if you circumnavigate the globe on like United Airlines or Delta Airlines, you can become a member too. So,
oh, cool. That's probably a pretty low level of membership, though. I think if. Oh. Yeah. All right. But anyway, so yeah, maybe we'll see you at the Explorers Club.
Definitely.
It's cool.
So speaking of stuff like that, I was on this boat last week for this eclipse, and this guy, this astronomer was there. He had been to both poles, the North and the South Pole.
Mm-hmm.
And he was asserting that maybe there's fewer people that have done that have gone into space. Do you think that's true?
Both? Probably.
Yeah, he'd been to the South Pole and the North Pole.
Yeah probably. Yeah, because North Pole is kind of hard, especially now since it's melted most of the time, right? You just got to go on a boat.
Yeah, he went on some Russian icebreaker and got up there. Yeah, I don't know.
So
everyone's got to get
it. I am going to Antarctica though on a cruise ship in December over Christmas with William Shatner and a bunch of other people.
Yeah. Wow, tell us what's this about?
It's on a seaborne ship. It's a private charter where people can come along with the great William Shatner, fellow space traveler.
Yep.
Former Captain Kirk.
Captain Kirk.
Yeah. And we're going to go with a bunch of guests and get to go to Elephant Island where Shackleton
was nice.
For a while.
Oh, yeah.
So these guys were on the same cruise I was talking about. They went to Elephant Island, and apparently what you can do is you can like hike in and then hike down to like the final approach to the whaling station that like reenacts Shackleton's when he first got back and to some semblance of civilization. Yeah. And you walk down there and you see the whaling station, and you're like imagining what Shackleton must have felt like after going 1,300 kilometers in an open boat across the ocean. Yeah.
That's a different island. That's South Georgia, but we're not going to go there.
Oh, Elephant Isle is where he left.
Where he got stuck.
Sorry.
And for your viewers that aren't familiar,
explain.
This guy Ernest Shackleton in his ship Endurance, which I named my book Endurance a little bit in honor of him because he was a hero of mine. But he took like 28 people from England. They were going to go to the South, traverse this Antarctic continent. And they left in like September. In January, they got stuck in the ice. A couple months later, their ship broke up.
Yep.
Lived on the ice for like a year. This is in the early, like 1903 or 4 or something, early part of the last century. They drifted around for a while, and they figured they're going to die here. So they had to get off this ice sheet. They hiked for months with their dogs pulling their sleds. Eventually, they get to the edge of the ice. They go like, I don't know, it was like 7 days in the open lifeboats to South Georgia, spend like a month there.
Elephant Island.
Oh, I'm saying Elephant Island. And eventually Shackleton realized, hey, we're going to die here. So a few of them had to go like 800 miles, like Garrett said, to South Georgia Island, only navigating with the stars, get to South Georgia. The five guys left a bunch of people on Elephant Island. They traverse South Georgia in the worst conditions that no one has ever done before, three of them. They go back, get the other two guys, and then Shackleton spends like 2 months trying to get through the ice and weather to pick up the rest of his crew. Over 2 years from the time they left, they were like marooned for like over a year and a half. And the crazy thing about this is nobody died.
Nobody died. Yeah. It's amazing.
How is this possible? Yeah. Every time I go on a cruise, somebody dies.
Beware, travelers to the.
Well, you know that all you can eat buffet on Royal Caribbean. I mean that'll kill you. You wolf down all those spare ribs and you're gonna get a massive coronary. I mean it's just guaranteed.
So wait, you're talking about cruises with the Navy, or are you talking about like fun cruises?
Regular. I've been on several cruises where somebody has died.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
Don't ask where they put them.
So on the ship last week, in the middle, the alarm goes off in the middle of the night, and I hear a stretcher crew to deck seven. Deck seven forward, stretcher crew. I'm like, yeah. And then the next day we're delayed because an ambulance is coming to take somebody off. This happens all the time.
Yeah.
Wow. Very dangerous, common. Man.
That's why
I got to say the average age on this cruise I was on was a little high.
Yeah, that's part of it, obviously.
In fact, there were a lot of walkers and scooters on this thing. And I was like, man, if we hit an iceberg, you know, forget about it.
Yeah. I was just going for the jokes, not reality. I know.
Yeah. That's pretty good. Yeah. So you mentioned, Scott, you mentioned your book and naming it Endurance in honor in somewhat of, well, mm-hmm. of course, your experiences, but also Shackleton. And it made me think of another book that both inspired both of us, but it really had an effect on you in your pursuit of what you did with your career and your life, mm-hmm. which is The Right Stuff. Am I remembering that correctly?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was really a pivotal moment when I picked up that book. I went from underachieving kid at 18 years old, picking that book up, reading it in the course of a few days, and just finding my life path in Tom Wolfe's incredible words. You know, when I finished reading it, I say, and I think to myself, you know, okay, now I have a recipe for how to, you know, improve my situation. I'm going to go into the Navy and fly fighter planes, become a test pilot, become an astronaut. You know, it was all right there. You know, step one of my new plan, finish reading this book. Step two, find the right stuff, which is actually kind of hard to find because it's really not clear what it is.
Yeah. But
I worked hard at it, and I truly believe had it Tom not written that book, I wouldn't be sitting here talking with you guys today.
Really? What was it about? And was there something in particular about it, or maybe a passage in it, or just the whole, what was it that hit you that all of a sudden the light bulb went on or something? It changed your life.
Yeah, there was, you know, in the beginning of the book, it starts off with this very, you know, Tom wrote in this, and you know, you met him before.
Yeah, I met him through you, actually, which I'll be always grateful for, because that changed my life as well. I saw the movie first, mm-hmm. and then I read the book. Yeah. The movie came out in I think in 1983, mm-hmm. the end of 83, and I saw it probably early 84, and that changed my life. It got, you know, I didn't have the delusion I was going to be able to become a fighter pilot. I knew I wasn't cut out for that, but it got me interested again in the space mm-hmm. program and just that culture and doing something with purpose. And so I saw the movie, read the book, and I talk about it all the time, almost every talk I give, how that changed my life. And mm-hmm. I was lucky to meet Tom through you when you came after your flight to the Intrepid. You invited him when you got an award from the Intrepid, and I got to meet him there, which was very special. But yeah, but you were talking about Tom the way he is and the way he writes.
Remember though, for one second, remember that Caney ad with the wolf?
Yeah, with the wolf on it. Yeah,
that was the coolest thing. But
yeah,
anyway,
he's wearing a white suit. Yeah,
white suit
with a hat.
White hat.
Yeah, he's cool. Cane. He was.
But
cool.
I think it was how, you know, he invented that like genre of creative nonfiction where you're writing in a fictional way of a real account of people, but you're writing it and as it kind of appears like fiction. So it's much more visual, and I don't know, it just really caught my attention. But I remember the first, like in the first chapter, there was one part where they were talking about this guy just crashing in Florida and crashing mm-hmm. the airplane and getting killed. And I was like, man, this is exciting. I want to do this.
I mean, not killed in an airplane crash,
getting close to getting killed and not getting killed.
Right, right. That's
somehow
the key part.
Interested me, which is, I don't know, maybe there's something wrong with your brain. I don't know.
I remember when we were first selected and we were brand new rookie astronauts in my class. I was the class right after you guys. So we were class of 98, 2 years.
How could
later.
We forget you showed up?
I know. Yeah. Rue the day. But it was the final game at the Astrodome. They were shutting that thing down, and like Neil Armstrong threw out the first pitch, and we all got to go, and we got to stand on like the base paths, you know, and watch this happen. And I'm standing there next to Ken Ham, and we're getting this roar. We're introduced. We get this roar from the crowd, and he's saying this is just like that end scene in The Right Stuff, where like the guys that go on to become astronauts are all being feted and like are in a parade, ticker tape parade and all this going on, and treated really. And then meanwhile, you know, Chuck Yeager's back there flying at F-104 and getting into a flat spin and doing the real work. And now we're just like a bunch of prima donnas. And he was like, yeah, that's where we are now.
Yeah. Whoa, yeah. Gary, you see that picture of yourself from back then?
Yeah. Yeah. I missed that. I missed that little bit of hair. I said a little bit.
Very stylish. I should have given up on my hair a lot earlier than I did.
Yeah.
You try to hang on for a while until you realize you look like a clown.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking about Tom Wolfe and The Right Stuff that made a big difference in your life. And then.
Yeah. Huge. Yeah. Huge. Yeah. I call that.
Didn't your father also like have a little heart to heart with you at one point?
Oh yeah. Sort of. This is funny. So yeah, my brother and I, you know, people think our paths were very similar getting into at NASA, right? Because we were both, you know, test pilots and I was a fighter pilot. He was an attack pilot. He flew A-6s. I flew the Tomcat, better, much, 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 much better airplane, harder to fly, cooler looking than the double ugly, I think we called the A-6 intruders in the 80s. But in any case, people thought our paths were like exactly the same, but they weren't. Because when we were growing up, we both were like, I mean, I'm surprised I never got held back because I wouldn't do anything. Like no work. I remember like the third grade seeing a list of all the work I didn't do. And basically it was everything we were supposed to do that year that I had to finish on the last day. And the teacher's like, you didn't do anything. And I'm like, I know I can't, it's not possible. Figuring I'm going to like be kept back, but I don't know, maybe my dad like twisted her arm or something. But in any case,
as an 8-year old.
Yeah. We're like in the ninth grade. I'll keep this brief. We're in the ninth grade. Our dad sits us both down. We're getting ready to go into high school. Maybe we're in eighth grade. I don't know. High school there. Yeah, we had middle school. So it was like 7th through 9th. We're getting ready to go in 10th grade. My dad says, hey, you guys both are crappy students. I'm going to start thinking about vocational education for you. Well, actually, let me back up. I said to my brother a few years ago, I was like, hey, whatever happened there in a 10th grade? We both sucked. And then all of a sudden you're a straight A student. He goes, you don't remember dad sitting us down right before high school and saying how we both suck and we're going to go to like vocational school and become mechanics or something. I was like, no, I don't remember that at all. Only because there was probably a squirrel running outside the window. Had it not been for that squirrel, I'm sure I would have went to Columbia and Caltech with you guys. Damn squirrel.
Yep. It's all that squirrel's fault.
Yeah, so that's what happened.
Completely different trajectory until I read the book, The Right Stuff. And then I caught up and surpassed him for a while. And then he became a U.S. senator. So.
Yeah. Well, boy, that must have been a good talk that your dad had, at least for Mark's sake. And
I have no idea.
Yeah.
He missed it entirely.
What's the story with the time here, Doss? Are we what's going on? Are we taking a break or stopping or what's happening?
We've got just a couple minutes. We're coming up in about 45 minutes. So whenever y'all naturally want to take a little bit of a break, we can do that. That's up to y'all.
All right. I think this is a good spot. So why don't we take a little break and then we'll come back and record part two.
All right.
Good deal. I will let y'all hop off and I will keep everybody comfortable. I don't know about that. Company was what I meant to say while y'all hop off real quick.
So Mass, that was great, wasn't it? That episode with Scott.
It was great catching up with Scott and thank you very much, audience, for listening.
Yes. Thank you. And if you enjoyed that episode with Scott, guess what? There's a part two that we're going to release in about 2 more weeks on Two Funny Astronauts. So stay tuned.
See you then.
See you then. And you'll learn all about how much Scott loves ham radio. There's a little teaser for part two. So just tune in. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.